You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Wednesday, January 27th. Today, we're going to be continuing on with our little mini-series on lessons learned from the coronavirus pandemic. 10 months into it, we're still, I guess, learning things, but it's not too early, I suppose, to get a sense of what are some of the ways we might want to build back better, or what are some of the opportunities that may be presented by the pandemic that we've all been struggling with since last March. We're very pleased and honored today to be joined by two distinguished guests who are here to give us their takeaways on that. Very pleased to have with us today Senator Becca Ballant, who helps to represent Windham County in the state Senate, and she has also recently been named as the Senate Pro Tem Leader. Also joining us are Senator Randy Brock, who helps to represent Franklin County in the state Senate. He is the Republican Party Minority Leader. And both of them were co-chairs of a Senate working group that formed around the idea of discussing lessons learned. So it's really terrific to have both of you here today to have you share some of your thinking around this. Senator Ballant, I think I'll just start with you, if I may. I'll direct this question to both of you. In the broad sense, what do you see as the primary takeaways or lessons learned from the pandemic we've been going through? Is there something that stands out first and foremost? What do you see?
There are so many lessons, and I'm going to, one of the main ones, which I'm going to let Randy take the lead on in a moment, is broadband. And so I have to put that front and center. It touched on our challenges around telehealth and education and, of course, remote work. But that is really something that Randy is particularly interested in, and so I'm going to let him take the lead on that. But the other piece that was front and center was our challenges around childcare. And so we certainly have a workforce in Vermont, like in every state, that is dependent on an adequate early education and childcare system. And it became abundantly clear from the very first weeks of the pandemic that our system of supporting our youngest Vermonters had a lot of gaps in it. And so that is something obviously that we've talked about for many years, but it didn't become so starkly clear to us that you cannot operate the economy if you do not have adequate childcare, because most families, if they have two parents in the household, both parents are working to try to afford their life here in Vermont. And many Vermonters, single head of a family. And so without adequate childcare, it's very difficult to get the economy up and running. So we can talk more about some of those details, but I'd love Randy to talk about broadband, because I know it's critically important to Windham County and to Bennington County. So.
All right. It's Brock.
Critically important everywhere in Vermont. Yeah. Now, we, yeah. During the course of dealing with the pandemic, General Assembly, certainly in the Senate, we spent hours every day on Zoom. Now, the good news of that is I finally concluded that you can't catch COVID from a Zoom conference.
No matter how many hours, right, Randy? No matter how many hours of exposure. Yes.
But aside from that, it did point out clearly how communication is critical in an emergency. And when I take emergency, we take emergency more broadly. We're dealing with a pandemic, but there are all kinds of emergencies. And that's another thing that perhaps I'll talk about a little bit later, is the whole issue of contingency planning for things that you don't expect that could have a tremendous impact on your operations and on the people in Vermont. But clearly it was evident very early on that there were key things that we needed to do as a state, and that the people within the state, just in order to stay in business, to connect with government, to connect with healthcare, to educate their children, to work, since so many people wound up working remotely, that broadband became even more critical than it was already becoming. And what we saw, of course, was that if you're in some places in Vermont, you have superb connectivity, regardless of where you are. And in other places, there are complete wastelands. And that has broad implications, not just in a pandemic, but overall in terms of Vermont's economy. It's been said, for example, that if you go to sell a house in Vermont, particularly in rural Vermont, add $5,000 to the price of that home if it has broadband, and begin to subtract, and in some cases make it unsaleable to many people if it does not have good broadband. And we have a lot of challenges. The challenges involve terrain, it involves distance, it involves a thin population, which makes it much more difficult to get connectivity every place in Vermont. And the key in all of it that we saw here was we need a statewide strategy that's more clear, that's clearer, that's more comprehensive, that's more focused, that has better targets than what we have right now. And that's something we're working on in the General Assembly during this session.
Well, I think, too, if I could, Andrew, just to follow up with what Randy said, the other thing that we realized from this emergency is we also serve together on the Economic Development and Housing Committee and have for years. And one of the things that we've talked about within that committee is the possibility and promise of remote work, that it is something that we've tried to make progress on, but we never imagined that from one day to the next, we would have to move our entire workforce remotely. And there were many, you know, bumps and holes and you know, connectivity deserts, as Randy said. But when you step back and you think how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of Vermonters were from one day to the next able to work remotely, it is a testimony to people's ability to adapt. And we in the legislature were one of the only legislative bodies in the country that also was able to adapt over just a several weeks' time. So it was a wonderful opportunity that came out of, you know, a lot of panic and emergency, but we did it, and it was a huge accomplishment. So I just wanted to make sure I highlighted that positive aspect. And it also gives us hope that the remote work future of Vermont is part of reducing our carbon footprint, and that that is a critical part, that if we can make that possible to have fewer people commuting each day, that is a very practical way that we can try to reduce our carbon output here in Vermont. So thanks for letting me add that.
Oh, absolutely. And feel free to jump in whenever the spirit moves. I guess I just thought as a follow-up then how do we get from here to there? I mean, we've had communication union districts emerge around the state. I believe the governor yesterday in his budget address talked a little bit about, you know, investing some of the federal dollars that the state has received into expanding broadband capacity around the state. But I've also heard very large numbers associated with really wiring the state to the degree that we'd probably like to see it, you know, $200, $300 million in that range. How do we get from where we're at now? I mean, there seems to be widespread consensus that broadband is something we absolutely need to upgrade. How are we going to get there?
Well, first we need a plan. And that's step one. And we've had various attempts at a plan, but we don't have what the statutes that we've already passed requires. And that is a comprehensive 10-year telecommunications plan that goes into sufficient depth that we actually have a blueprint. And it's a blueprint that's got to combine a lot of elements, most of which we have right now. We have legacy providers who provide broadband service, and I mean the Verizons and the Comcasts and so on of the world, the VTELs. We also have our new communications union districts. Thus far, what we've seen of them is very, very promising. And what they are effectively is municipalities. By grouping towns in a certain way, much as we've done fire districts in the past, we provide a framework in a geographical area to provide broadband to folks in that area. Now, one of the things that a plan does is it links all of this together. So there's logic in what we're doing. In some cases, there will be some duplication in a way that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it builds vibrancy, it builds assurance that you will stay connected. It also adds the competitive spirit, because we have what really is already a public-private arrangement. We have the CUDs that are kind of semi-public. but also have some private aspects. We have the legacy providers that are private businesses in competition. And we've got to link all this together in a logical way so that we do expand broadband without needless duplication, but with vibrancy.
Senator Bell,
one of the things that I was thinking about, you mentioned the governor's address yesterday, and I just thought it might be useful for viewers, Randy, if you just talk for a moment. We talk in the legislature about poll harvesting, and I think a lot of people are a little puzzled. What does that mean, and how does it relate to connectivity? So I just thought it might be fun for you to explain, when we talk about poll harvesting, what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about, you know, you have all these electrical poles that are up and down the highway. You have poles for Comcast and other kinds of cable providers. Those poles are essential in the chain to get fiber, which is what we're really talking about, is fiber to the premises throughout Vermont. Mm-hmm. And really understanding what's on our poles and where our poles are and who owns them and what connectivity there is there. That's a process that we already started in some emergency broadband planning that we did during the COVID, and that needs to be expanded. Because what we clearly want to do is we want to understand, how do we get fiber? And fiber is, we're talking about fiber optic cable. And fiber optic cable is the most modern way to extend things to the home, using wires that transmit hundreds, if not thousands, of signals at the same time. And we need to do so in a way that's also redundant, so that desirably, if, let's say, a storm causes a wire to go down, that there's an alternate path that connectivity could reach your home, even if there's a wire that normally services it that's down. So there's a lot of thought that goes into it. And the first thing in pole harvesting is to understand what's there. Once we understand what's there, then we can better understand what do we need to do in order to expand it. And often a pole may be owned by, let's say, a utility, an electric utility, but that pole also could carry fiber and other communications lines that are leased from the pole owner. And again, we need a plan. And we need a plan to really understand what we have and then to determine how best to tackle it as a state. Now, we have a whole bunch of entities that are doing things on their own. And that's good. The issue of competition, the issue of variety, the issue of new technology being added, that's a plus. Where we get to a minus, though, is if things are operated in such a shambles manner that the left hand doesn't have any idea what the right hand is doing. And to an extent, even when we have a competitive environment, that's not entirely helpful. We want the competition, but we want things to be done in a logical way that's cost effective, ultimately for the end user, the consumer.
And so when we look to from local concerns about connectivity and IT, and then pull out to the larger issue of those of us who work in state government, what is the work that needs to be done there to essentially have a plan for our IT infrastructure at state government going forward? And so we saw, I'm sure, Andrew, you heard about all the troubles that we had at Vermont Department of Labor trying to get people's claims processed, trying to get their benefits out the door. And, you know, that was one of the darkest aspects, I think, of our pandemic response. And it wasn't for lack of trying. It wasn't for lack of, you know, working hard. The commissioner there was working as hard as he could, and everybody in the department were working as hard as they could. But we did not have the capacity to handle the volume. And we had states that we could look to, thinking of Rhode Island in particular, that knew sort of intuitively that at some point they would need to have their processing done in the cloud. And our IT system was old, it was in a shambles in many ways, cobbled together over decades. And that's not the only IT system in state government that's in that situation. And so one of the things the governor also proposed yesterday in the budget was really trying to develop an IT budget, essentially, that would work a lot like the Capitol bill. So that you had, like, you know, you have your transportation fund is also in a bill, a line item by line item, that if we could do this similarly for IT, we'd know going forward, what are the year-to-year costs for software upgrades? You know, what, as we look ahead 5, 10 years, what systems are we going to have to replace? And up until this point, it's really been ad hoc, you know, bit by bit, as Randy knows, as things fall apart, as things don't do the job that we thought they'd be able to do. And so, you know, taking it from the personal and what's the plan for us to get fiber to all the homes, and then taking it to larger state government, what's our plan for making sure these systems operate well for Vermonters so that they can get information and benefits and, you know where to get answers. You need an IT system that's up for the challenge to do that.
We have historically had problems with IT, and my general comment is that IT, information technology, has never been a core competency of Vermont state government. You look back historically, and we have problem after problem, disaster after disaster. The most prominent one was Vermont Health Connect. And that was a wake-up call. And we've done a number of things since then, such as created the Agency of Digital Services, so that we have an empowered chief information officer at the head of it. Now, what the governor proposed was going beyond that and then taking some of the financial aspect out of the individual departments and agencies, which in the past had historically managed IT and not done so very well, to provide yet another layer, and very much the way that it's done in most large companies in the private sector, in which you have an empowered chief information officer who provides the technological oversight, but you still have the individual agencies and departments involved who know their businesses, and the two have to work together in an effective way. But from a budgeting standpoint, we don't know if you were to go through state government right now and ask how much did we spend on Vermont Health Connect, nobody can really tell you. But what we do know is, A, it didn't work. It wasn't well thought out. It was put together in a very disjointed manner. And we still have an army of part-time people and contractors who are needed because the functionality of the system wasn't there. We can't do that again. And we've made progress. One of the things, I'm on the Joint Information Technology Oversight Committee, which is a new committee that was formed a couple of years ago to really focus on this issue. And one of the things that the committee has started doing is taking a good inventory of the major systems around Vermont and, in effect, risk rating them from call it red, yellow, and green in its simplest form, to say what are the things that we really need to get on and to fix quickly, because they represent both a risk, a threat, and also just their age, they can collapse on us.
Do you both think that this is really a federal problem? I mean, the parallel with the rural electrification programs of the 1930s is often drawn around broadband. Do you think ultimately this is a federal issue that would be best solved from Washington with a 50-state approach rather than, you know, Vermont trying to do one thing or another?
Broadband is, for all intents and purposes, a federal program in that many of the things that the states would like to do to be able to better regulate it are preempted, and we can't do it. And so when people say, why don't you fix this? In many cases, we unfortunately have to say we can't, because the federal regulations and federal law prohibits it. So we have this hybrid, and the hybrid is not working nearly as well as it should.
Go ahead, Randy, sorry. Yeah.
Same solution to Vermont that it does to New York City is not necessarily going to be helpful either.
Yeah. But certainly, Andrew, in terms of infusion of the size of the chunk of change that we need, yeah, we need some more federal support to complete the work that needs to be done on the local level. You know, as Randy has spoken to so eloquently, like, we have to do the hard work of figuring out what works for us here in this geography, in this, you know, in this layout of scattered towns. What's going to work here is not going to work in New York, is not going to work in Wyoming. And so we need to take the know-how that we have here, but we are going to need a larger investment from the federal level. Speaking of investments, I just want to make sure I don't forget to tell people that one thing that Vermont did really well was we had been saving in our reserve funds. We had been paying into our reserve funds, and because of that, we weathered this pandemic so much better than so many other states. We are, you know, that news yesterday about this revenue upgrade, that's not the only good news. I want people to understand we did save for an emergency and that paid off. And we're going to continue to do that. Randy sits on finance and now I've moved from finance over to appropriations, but it's something that we're talking about in appropriations. Like that served us well. We have to mm-hmm. continue to do that.
In the few minutes we have left, I thought it might be interesting to hear both your reactions to the governor's budget address yesterday and whether or not you think that some of the points he was making take us in the right direction in terms of understanding the lessons from the pandemic and seizing the opportunities that might be presented by it. Do you think he, in addition to the broadband point, touched on some important areas that you and your colleagues in the Senate and the rest of the legislature might be able to endorse in some way?
So, Andrew, one of the things I was thinking about yesterday was that as I was listening, I was thinking we're singing from the same hymn book. The things that he is articulating that are important to him and his administration are also important to us in the legislature. Housing investments, broadband, childcare, all of these things that we've articulated that are important. And so I say we're singing from the same hymn book. We might be on a little bit different pages, but the work of the executive team and the legislative branch working together on this budget is going to be trying to get us, you know, closer and closer to the same page. So, but we're starting from a great place of moving towards issues that both branches care a lot about. So I think there's a lot of common ground there. What did you think, Randy?
I agree. One of the big lessons learned from the entire pandemic is that both the administration and the General Assembly and the three parties in the General Assembly worked remarkably well and remarkably collaboratively together in order to get us where we are right now. Yes, there were disagreements. No question about that. There always are. But as I've said many times before, we can disagree without being disagreeable. Yeah. And as a result, we get things done. I think one of the major messages from the governor's speech is one that I think many of us believe, and that is use one-time money for one-time things. In other words, investments in things that are not continuing programs that you then have to figure out 2 years from now, well, where am I going to get the money to continue that? Right. And that's not what the governor did. What the governor did was recognize, here's some things we need to do right now, such as building infrastructure that essentially is a one-time thing that doesn't require at least the degree of maintenance that many programs that you might establish would. And I think that's a positive thing to protect us for the future. The second thing, of course, is we have a long history of balancing the budget. We're the only state in the nation that is not required by law to balance its budget annually. And we always balance our budget, regardless of which party is in power. And that's one of the things that provided strength to us in this pandemic.
Absolutely.
In the couple of minutes we have left, I just had one last question to throw your way. Are there any long-term impacts from the pandemic that worry you, that you're concerned about going forward,
yes,
that aren't going to be easy fixes, in addition
absolutely.
To the broadband thing?
Yeah. The one that I've been thinking about so acutely the last couple of days is the mental health impact it's having on families and on students. And, so I have two children at home who are K-8 students, and I see all of the resources and support that I have to allow them to, you know, work remotely. Sometimes all three of us have to be on the broadband at the same time. We have the ability to connect. There are so many students and families who are feeling isolated. And we're just starting to get the reports across the nation of what appears to be rising levels of suicide in students, increasing rates of depression and anxiety. And so, yes, these are not easy fixes by any means. We're going to have to really keep a close eye on our school age population, giving the schools the support that they need and our mental health providers the supports they need, because I think we're going to see a big need coming out of this pandemic that is going to be difficult to address. So that's a strong concern I have.
And Senator Brock, you get the last word.
Well, there was a pre-pandemic concern about our demographic crisis. We're a small state and we're not growing. And in many cases, we had begun at least to lose some population. We noticed that many of our costs, though, are continuing to rise in some cases as our population falls. And that's not a positive thing. Healthcare cost is high and growing, and the cost of education at K through 12, some would say, is out of sight. We've got to confront the demographic crisis. And we've already done a lot of work in this area, the remote worker program and other kinds of programs to get more people to come to Vermont. The pandemic may actually have been a slight benefit in that regard, because now this is a safe place to be, in a place that that folks can see really did work in the pandemic. And we need to use that. We need to increase the number of people that we have in the state to help shoulder some of the burden of the costs associated with it. Not to mention that we perhaps also ought to look at the costs.
Indeed. Well, boy, so much more we could talk about here. I wish we had another half an hour to kind of unravel some of these issues, but I guess we're going to have to leave it there for now. I wanted to thank you both, Senator Rebecca Ballant and Senator Randy Brock. Really a pleasure and an honor to have you on our program today. Thank you again for making the time for this discussion, and I'll let you get back to the next Zoom call you're undoubtedly going to have to go to.
Thanks for the invitation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you in Montpelier one of these days.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.